Kim, now you somehow believe that there's common myths about love that are not true, right? That's what we're going to talk about today. So,
Right.
welcome to the show. Now, you're also very, very charitable. What makes you so charitable?
You know what? It's a funny thing how this life works, but I love to give. I love to give. I love to help. I love to serve. And one thing that I found out about serving and helping and doing and giving is that you can't outgive. Life is just crazy. Sort of upside down in that way. You go to help people to give, and what you receive is so much more than you can ever give. So it just fills my heart, fills my soul. And so I just love to help people.
And there's obviously a motivation behind that, because sometimes people that are so charitable have endured a life of pain prior. So your backstory has with it some weight. Tell us what kind of happened in the past with you.
Right. Well, so I was diagnosed with breast cancer a few years ago, and that alone is kind of smacks you in the head and it rocks your world, right? When you hear the word cancer. But then 4 months later, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and he passed away 6 weeks after that. And so I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. All of a sudden, I was alone and I'd been married for almost 29 years. I was 47 years old. I got married young and I never expected to be alone. You know, you expect to grow old together, be the old people sitting on the porch on rockers, drinking lemonade and smiling at each other, or whatever it is that people do when they're old and smile at each other on a porch, I guess. And all of a sudden, I had this different life that I had to figure out. And it made me question some things. It made me question love, what the real meaning of love is. It made me wonder what I was going to do. But one thing that happened is that when I was physically able to go back to work, I wasn't sure what I was going to do, if I was going to go back into my businesses, if I was going to go back into the nonprofit world. And I ended up taking a job as part-time bookkeeper of an organization that my father and I had started 10 years before. That was being run by this man. And 12 days later, there was an earthquake in Haiti that killed 200,000 people. So I went from part-time bookkeeper to full-time 24/7. And within 2 weeks, I was in Haiti. And then I was in Haiti part of every month for the next several years. And I found that something I'd never been told but discovered is there is such healing in service. Get outside yourself and give to others. It's so healing.
What kind of identity crisis did you go through? How would you describe those emotions when you lost your husband? Because it seems, and like again, when we kind of went through our planning session offline, he died not long after he was diagnosed, and then you lost your father 2 years prior to the same kind of cancer. Is that right?
His father, right, died 2 years before
Father, okay.
that. Yes, right.
Devastating. How do you describe those emotions for someone that has lost their partner in their 40s or 50s? They're not quite at the end of their road just yet, but then they might think, I feel too old to meet someone new. I wouldn't even know how to date anymore. I had my life all figured out. Now what?
Right. It changes everything. It changes everything. Statistics with widows are terrible. Widows lose 75% of their friends. If they're statistically, if they're attending a church, 75% of them will change churches. And widows typically gain statistically 15 pounds. So not only do you lose the love of your life, but you lose your friends and you gain weight. Like
Why? Why
there's
would you lose your friends?
Well, I think because you're friends with couples, you know, a lot of times it's couples that you're friends with. You might have some friends that are just yours, but you tend to gravitate toward people that are in your same position, you know, have kids your age, same ages as your kids, whatever. And so we hung out with a lot of couples, and all of a sudden you're not a couple. And I don't know, I've been told that women can feel threatened by that. I hope that's not true because you know, it's not like I was going to go after anybody's husband.
No, and no, just company would have been nice.
Yeah, right, right, right. But there's a weird dynamic, I guess, a shift that happens. And
yeah. Very sad to think, you know, you've been friends with these people for a while, you hang out with them, you do dinners and stuff, and then the worst thing in your life possible pretty much has just happened, and then they're actually not there to support you in fear that you could potentially steal their husband. What a horrible thought.
It is a horrible thought. I mean, I don't know that that's the reason. I've been told that that's a reason why people walk away, you know, why people make that shift. I think it's hard sometimes for people to be around people that are grieving. So often people don't know what to say, don't know what to do, don't know how to react. And
welcome to this short ad break. Not sure if you're aware, but I'm a personal trainer and have been for years now. So if you like the idea of training and being educated on how to eat for better health, then maybe it's time to hire me as your personal coach. You can start feeling confident, self-assured and healthy again, so you can attract the best kinds of lovers and friendships into your life today. You can apply for online or face-to-face coaching with me, where I will take you through a hybrid fitness system that covers the three pillars to success, where I take you through the deep work of mindset principles and help you achieve breakthroughs, guide you to understand meal preparation for your goals, and customize your weight training program to help you build a healthy physique that you can be proud of. Find the application link in the show notes of this episode. Back to the show.
I think sometimes people expect grief to look a certain way and act a certain way, but everybody grieves differently. Everybody grieves differently, but it can be so easy to walk into a place and see friends, and the friends are afraid to come and say hello, because if they ask how you are and you're, you know, you've just lost your husband, they might not really want to hear about it because they don't want to be sad or make you more sad. And it's just a strange thing that you need to work through and figure out what that all means. And then how to go on. You know, I figured out that there's so many things that you don't get any choice over. You have got no control over. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd never pick cancer. I had no control over that. No control over my husband getting cancer and passing away. But there are things that I do have control of, and that is how I choose to live. Mm-hmm. How much happiness I want in my life and joy, and what kind of friends I want and who I want to be surrounded by. And what kind of people are going to bring me up, and that we can support each other. And so those are the choices that I pick, the ones that I can.
If you could have your time all over again while your husband was still alive, knowing the fate he would endure, what would you have done differently to prepare your grief better?
Wow, you are so good. That is such a good question.
And the reason why I asked that is because it sounds to me that couples who are friends with other couples endure somewhat of a superficial level of friendship. We are only friends because we share stuff in common, because we've got kids and we've got these things in common. So you're more convenient to us because our kids can get along with your kids, and we're too busy for anything deeper than that, right? Because a lot of couples get very deep with each other, but they struggle to get deep independently away from the relationship with their own sets of friends. And this is a common thing that I see with other couples, is they have not much time for other people, or only time for other couples. So, you know, you might have those childhood friends you've known for so many years, and because they don't have a partner yet, they might be in their 30s and still single. You know, it's kind of like, well, we don't really have time for you anymore. We've got more time for our coupley kind of friends. That's why I asked that question.
Yeah, well, and you're so right. And it is really a good question. And I think that's so true, that those friends maybe aren't the friends that you get real deep with. I have friends from high school that my best friend from high school is still my best friend. And I have other friends from high school that we still do stuff together. And those are deep friendships. Those are friendships that are lasting a lifetime, will last a lifetime. And those are deep friendships, but you're absolutely right. You know, you do tend to hang out with people who maybe go from work or you at the gym or you meet them wherever. Mm-hmm. So you've got something in common because of where you're meeting them. And maybe you meet them because you share daycare or whatever it is. And right. But aren't necessarily your tribe, your people.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot more women, I think, need to have a more closer look at their own level of identity and not be friends with someone because it's convenient, but because at your depth, that if things are going to fall apart, you know that you can call someone when you really need it, not because once a month or once every 3 months you guys are going to catch up around a mezze platter in a backyard and watch kids play. So just relying on your partner for absolutely everything and to be your pillar of strength for absolutely everything, I think is a bad way to go in a long-term relationship, because when things like this happen and it takes you by absolute shock and dismay, you know, you want to have somewhat of a really strong support system, because being a widow would suck.
Yeah, well, you are so right. You're so right. You have hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's so true about relationships. And fortunately, I'm a pretty tough cookie. And so I had a life outside my husband, which maybe that sounds odd, but I think it's healthy. Like my friend, I had friends that my husband knew, but really were not his friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he had friends that I knew them, but didn't have the relationship that he had with them.
Yeah.
And it is healthy. And you're absolutely right. You need that support system. And so if you only rely on each other, that's going to be really, really hard. Mm-hmm. But I did have a great support system. Lots of people rallied around and that love me that I love. And so
fantastic.
That helped a lot.
When he died, how different did life become for you? What did you do? Did you have like an eat, pray, love moment where you went on a bit of a self-discovery journey, wrote some books? Like what was the 360 and how long was that turning point for?
That's pretty much exactly what I did. I decided I would figure out the true meaning of love. So I decided I would dedicate a full year to figuring out the meaning of love. There seems to be a mystery around love, what it is really, and how it's demonstrated sometimes is absolutely not love. Things done in the name of love, said in the name of love that are not love. But what is it really? And I really wanted to honor my husband because I loved him. We had a great relationship. I know I had it better than a lot of people have it their whole lives. He was wonderful. And I wanted to honor him by living fully and living happily. And I wanted to know that I was doing it right. And love is everything. Love's universal. Mm-hmm. Love is who you are. And so I wanted to know. So I did. I went on this year-long quest to figure out the true meaning of love.
And where did you go? Where did you go?
Well, most of the time I was in Haiti when I was working on it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was like healing for you. Obviously giving back was what you needed to just get over the pain. It's a great distraction too, because heartbreak, breaking up, losing someone, you lose a big part of yourself, dies in that process and has to be reborn, which is your identity. So through doing all your charity work, what was your new meaning of love? What did that look and feel like?
Well, love for me changed tremendously. You know, I think I used to think of love as a feeling, an emotion, right? You fall in love, you fall out of love, you know, whatever words people use to describe love. And I realized that none of that was true. You know, the fear is an emotion. Fear is a feeling, right? So you watch a scary movie. And that night you hear every bump and every creak and every whatever going on in the house and you're afraid, but you don't live in that. You don't live in that fear and you don't live like in excitement, like every day is not Disney World. You don't live in that. Love is something that you live in. Love embodies you. Love is who you are. How you choose to live that love is completely up to you. Yeah. But love is completely who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well said. Amazing. So Haiti, so you're doing all this charity work in Haiti. How long did it take Haiti to get back up on its feet after that massive earthquake devastation?
Haiti get back up on its feet. That's an interesting thing to say because it kind of never really did. I mean, things happened again, you know, as far as commerce or, you know, whatever, things happened again. But Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, wow.
And the average Haitian, I believe the statistic is, lives on less than $2 a day.
Where is it exactly in the world?
It is in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. It's just south of Cuba. You know where Cuba is? It's an island South that America. Is shared with the Dominican Republic.
Yep, okay, in that region.
Right. So off the east coast, southeast coast of the United States.
Yeah, and what's the native tongue there?
They speak Creole, but they also speak French.
Oh, okay. And what's Creole? What would that be, like Spanish?
Creole is a mixture of languages, Spanish, French, and like an African dialect. Haiti is the only country in the history of the world where the French brought people over from Africa to be slaves. And they revolted and won their freedom. They rose up against the French and won their freedom. It was during Napoleon's reign. And Napoleon was fighting other places and lost the battle in Haiti. And so they gained their independence. And so the language of Creole is something that they developed so that they could communicate with each other without the French understanding what they were saying.
I see. A bit interesting history there for you guys. But I definitely didn't know that. So I'm not good when it comes to history and war and geography and stuff.
It's okay. You're good at a whole lot of other things, so it's all right.
I can't be good at everything. Okay, so you then became a love coach. What were you doing? Because you've been an entrepreneur for so long. What were you doing? What businesses were you running back in the day?
Well, I started my first business right out of high school. I bought an old, abandoned manufacturing building. It was a furniture manufacturing building. And I brought in tenants. I leased space, commercial, industrial space, and then bought more buildings and had more space. And then I bought a piece of land and developed an 18-hole golf course and banquet facilities and pro shop and fine dining. I bought a grocery store on St. Croix in the Virgin Islands.
Oh, wow, amazing. Yeah.
Travel agency, just different things throughout the years.
Yeah.
Many things that lasted for 30 years and others that kind of came and went. You know, I would sell for a profit and move on to something new.
So did a lot of those sort of those profits and earnings over the years, did that kind of allow you to go on that year-long self-discovery journey? Like, did you have enough money that you could just kind of walk away from life and go, I'm going to what's the word I'm looking for? I'm going to go and volunteer my services overseas and bills are paid, everyone's looked after. Because you've got five kids, right?
I do. I do. My kids were all adults when my husband passed away. So at least there was that. They were older.
Yeah.
So leaving and going to Haiti wasn't a problem that way. And yes, we'd done well financially. I did well financially. And so I was able to do that. It was kind of a funny time because it was right after a great recession in our country. And so business was not as strong as it should be, but I had great people running the businesses and so I didn't have to go back to them.
Yeah.
I had the luxury of being able to take that year and figure stuff out.
Amazing. I love that. So now what are you doing with life? Your love coach, and you've also written some books. Tell me more about that.
Yes. Well, I started writing when I was diagnosed with cancer because I went to the bookstore and everything was either medical or depressing. And I thought, I want to know, are there choices you make? What does it feel like? You know, what is it like to have breast cancer? I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so my first book is called Cry Until You Laugh. I started writing when I was diagnosed. And so I was writing through my husband's diagnosis, through losing him. I wrote for a little over a year. And I just believe it's true that you have to cry. I mean, everybody gets to cry. You can cry whenever you want to. Nobody should judge you for crying ever. But come to a place of laughter again, come to a place where you can laugh again. So Cry Until You Laugh is the name of that book. And then Love Is, it chronicles the journey that I took in figuring out the true meaning of love. And crazy stuff happened, crazy stuff. Like I was chased by a motorcycle gang and I got lost on a mile high mountain in the dark with a medical student. I slept outside with tarantulas and snakes. And
I can't even imagine. Yes. What was that like? what was it like? How do you explain what it's like to be chased? Why were you chased by a motorcycle gang? Was this in Haiti?
This was in Haiti. Yes. I was crossing the border, going to the Dominican Republic. I had two friends from the U.S. with me, two men.
Yeah.
We had this big truck that we had to take back over to the Dominican Republic. We had borrowed from over there.
Mm.
And I was always told, when you get to the border, don't stop on the Haitian side. Mm-hmm. And anytime I ever went through the border, the building that you had to go to was on the Dominican side. And in part of the building, you'd go get your stamp from Haiti. And then the other part of the building, you'd get your stamp from the Dominican Republic. Mm. So that's what I knew. So we got to the border and people are waving us down and trying to make us stop. And I'm like, no, no, don't stop. Keep going, keep going. Well, we get to the other side, to the Dominican side. And a Dominican man, very friendly man, walked up who spoke English. And he said, you were supposed to stop over there. We were supposed to stop. They had changed things.
Hmm.
And so we had to go back over, but it was crowded and difficult. And so one of my friends stayed with the truck. We had tools in the back. He stayed just to kind of guard everything, make sure everything was okay.
Yeah.
And then this this Dominican man arranged for motorcycles to take me and my other friend back over the border, get our passport stamped and come back.
Yeah.
So he arranged a price and arranged for these guys to drive us over. So we went, got our stamps, came back, and they wanted more money. And I said, no, we agreed on a price. We agreed on a price. You guys made the price. We agreed on that before we left. I'm not giving you more money.
Yeah.
So then we went and got our passport stamped on the Dominican side, got in the truck and started driving.
Mm.
And the man from the Dominican Republic needed a ride. So he hopped in the back of the truck. So my friend and he were in the back of the truck and my other friend's driving and I'm in the front seat. And all of a sudden we're hearing, go, go, faster, faster. We're like, what? What is going on?
Yeah.
And then we realized that rocks were being thrown at the truck, big rocks being thrown. Wow. And so my friends in the back, you know, the guys in the back are scared for their lives. And then there were motorcycles all around us. Like they were chasing us down and trying to get us to pull over to the side of the road. And so my friend who was driving just put the gas pedal down and drove like a crazy person. I felt like when we were going around corners, we were going up on two wheels. It was just nuts. And
wow.
Riding around. It was crazy. And then motorcycles would come and
what time at night was this? What time was that happening?
Pardon?
What time was all of that happening at night?
It was probably 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Maybe. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was
what did they want from you?
Well, that was the issue. They finally stopped following us, finally.
Mm, mm.
And so we got to the other side of it where our adrenaline is just pumping and we're looking at each other going, what just happened?
Mm.
And then I thought, oh, gosh. I said to my friend, I think that it's because I didn't give them the more money that they asked for.
Oh.
And my friend said, well, how much was it? And I said, $5. And he said, so we just risked our lives for $5. And looking back, you know, probably I should have just given him the money and not risked our lives. That might have been better.
But when you're in a poor country, $5, sometimes you're haggling for 50 cents or 20 cents when you're in those sort of countries. Because you're trying to make your money go far and you're getting used to, you know, the local currency and what things are worth. And they know that you can barter with them. There's a certain point that you can barter in poor countries like that. So
Exactly. But when you establish a price, you know, it's just always kind of been my theory, the way I've done things is that's why you establish a price ahead of time. So, you know, they're going to be happy. And so at the end, all of a sudden they don't say, now we want $300, you know, or whatever it happens to be. But to establish the price ahead of time, we should have been fine.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so fine after all.
Crazy. And you also slept with tarantulas?
Oh my goodness. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I did sleep with tarantulas and snakes, or at least they were on the ground. I had a gentleman from the U.S. call and ask me if I would show him a water project that I was working on in Haiti.
Yeah.
And I said, sure. So he came over with 8 men from the U.S. and I brought 2 Haitian friends who were also men who had been working on the water project, and they could translate.
Mm.
And we drove out to this remote area and we got where we were staying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a little building with 2 rooms. Mm. And in each room, there were 4 twin size beds.
Mm.
So 8 American men, 2 Haitian men, and me.
Mm.
And I thought we're going to be okay. We brought 2 cots with us. We brought an air mattress. And so I thought we can move stuff around in the rooms and we'll fit everybody and we'll be just fine.
Yeah.
Well, the head of the American men pulled me over. He's, Kim, can I talk to you? I'm like, sure. And he said, did you see the rooms? And I'm thinking, buddy, there is nothing else to see. This is a little place.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, he's asking me because he's going to think that I want my own room. So I'll just say, well, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he'll say, no. If anyone should sleep inside, it should be you. And I'll say, well, I don't care if there's other people in my room.
Yeah.
And he'll say, good, you know, then we'll be all set.
Yeah.
So I said, well, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he said, oh, good. Because we've got men on this trip that would not want a woman in their room.
Oh, no.
Yes. And so I had to figure it out. I had to see what I was going to do. And I saw this piece of plywood that was kind of held up by these wooden structures. And I thought, well, if I sleep under that, at least I won't get rained on. But I was scared to death because there are tarantulas and there are snakes and there are chupacabras or whatever it is lurking in the bushes of Haiti. I don't even know. And I was just out there in the elements. I was just exposed. And so I was very much afraid.
Mm.
And so the first night I went to bed and the air mattress held air for about an hour. And then I'm laying on gravel.
Yeah.
And it was so loud. Dogs were barking and horns were honking. And that finally died down probably sometime after midnight. And then voodoo drums started in the distance. That lasted a couple hours. Finally, I was able to go to sleep. And the first night came and went with no incident and everything was fine.
Mm.
So the second night, again, I'm on the gravel, the dogs, the horns, the voodoo drums.
Yeah.
But I woke up because there was something on my leg.
Oh,
and
no.
I was so afraid. I thought, God, does Haiti have the anti-venom to whatever it is that's about to dismember me? You know, can I be airlifted to Miami in time to save my life? And so I slowly lifted my head and I slowly opened my eyes. And it was a chicken. There was a dang chicken on my leg. And I didn't know whether to be mad because it woke me up from the little bit of sleep I was getting, or happy that it wasn't something much worse.
100%.
So then the third night, no problem. Nothing happened. Fourth night, again.
So none of these men offered you to stay in the room at all? No one thought, look, how about you come and take my bed and I'll sleep outside for tonight?
Right. No. Not
one. How arrogant is that? That's horrible.
It was interesting. Well, when I did this year-long thing, I felt like I needed a roadmap. So I used this 2,000-year-old poem, love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, does not boast, et cetera. Mm. And I decided I would take one word a month and work on it and figure out what is love that is patient. And that month I happened to be working on love keeps no record of wrongs. And I was kind of dreading that month because you might forgive people, but you don't forget the things that happened to you.
Yeah.
Right? So here I am in this situation, and this is what I'm working on, is love keeps no record of wrongs. And so the fourth night, again, the gravel, the dogs, the horns, again, the voodoo drums, and I'm finally asleep. And again, I woke up because there was something on my leg.
Mm.
And again, I was scared to death. And I slowly lifted my head and I slowly opened my eyes.
Yeah.
And again, it was the dang chicken. And again, I didn't know whether to be happy or mad that it was a chicken and not something worse. But that night we had chicken for dinner. So the fifth night came and went without any problems whatsoever.
Yeah. Were you cold or is it quite warm up there?
It's warm. It's hot. It's hot in Haiti. So that wasn't a problem. But I was mad at these guys. Like, I was bitter. You know, I thought, what? Who do they think they are?
Why didn't you say anything? I don't know why you didn't speak up. Like,
well, except I did. I said I'd sleep outside. You know, I mean, I'm the one that made that offer. It just backfired on me. I just didn't expect it to go that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here I'm working on Love Keeps No Record of Wrongs. And then it finally dawned on me what that means. That we don't forget the things that happen to us.
Mm.
But we choose the narrative. Mm. We choose the tone of the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of living in this bitterness of these rotten men that did this rotten thing to me, now it's just kind of this funny story that I lived through, and I could literally sleep anywhere in the world and be perfectly fine. And so it was a tough lesson to learn, but one that I learned.
Mm. Yeah, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, literally. So right. That's crazy. Anyway, good on you for doing that. Now, you run an organization.
Yes.
It's called
Raise a Boat International.
Raise a Boat International. And what's that about?
We're a partnering organization. So we work with people in their own country that have a passion, a vision to help people in their own country.
Yeah.
And just need someone to walk alongside.
Yeah.
And just need help with whatever they need help with. So they understand the culture. They understand the language. They understand the real need.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do. Just walk alongside.
Yeah.
And help.
So there's devastation in Turkey at the moment with the earthquake. Are you guys doing anything for Turkey right now?
Right now, I don't have plans to do things for Turkey. I've started receiving phone calls. So we're starting to figure out what we can do because relief work is another thing that we do.
Yeah.
And yes, it's horrible. It's so sad what's happening there. And yes, they need they're going to need a lot of help.
100%. So what is there any other charitable things coming up for for Raise a Boat International?
Well, we're always helping people. There's always stuff going on. And we're in Burkina Faso in West Africa. We've got projects in the Dominican Republic. We still are able to help with Haiti, even though the political climate there is so bad right now that I haven't gone back in a little while. Unfortunately, I miss it. But we're still able to help because we have projects in the Dominican Republic, so we can get supplies over and things over to people that need. And so, we're working on a bunch of stuff.
Mm, so you guys are busy. And then when you're not doing your charity work, you're being a love coach. So I'm interested to learn more about your love coaching. So someone comes to you for love coaching. What can you teach them?
There is so much that I can teach them. There are so many things that I believe most of us have been taught wrong about love.
Mm.
So many things that are passed down generation to generation, probably, right? Because we learn love from our parents, our grandparents, whoever, mentors in our lives, teachers, whoever it is that kind of teach us love along the way. And there are myths, there are things that we're taught about love that just are not love.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of it with the coaching is changing the mindset about what love really even is to begin with.
Yep.
And then walking through how to live it.
Are you more geared towards singles or couples?
Well, I work a lot with individuals or in small groups.
Yep.
I can work in couples, but I'll tell you one thing that I've discovered is it only takes one person to change a relationship.
Yep.
You know, quite often we think both people have to be on board, but if one person changes in the relationship is going to change.
Why do you feel that way? When you say that, what kind of significant change does one person need to do for the other one to get on board?
Well, I think one of the things is that we live with these expectations.
Yep.
We live with this expectation that love is a two-way street, that we better be giving back what we're giving.
Mm.
But that's one of the myths about love. Love is not a two-way street. Love is up to you, period. You have no control over anybody but yourself.
Mm.
So if you're loving somebody with this expectation of then getting love in return, you're setting yourself up for disaster, for loneliness, for heartache.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's going to come back to you. You don't control that. You have no control over that.
Yeah.
And when you realize that and you learn that it's just so wonderful just to love without those expectations, then it's on you. You're just pouring it out and you're just giving it. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, it changes your partner. I had this happen in my own relationship.
Yeah.
I was ready to throw in the towel at one point in time early on in my marriage because my husband would go to work and he'd come home and put his feet up and make his way to the dinner table and then eat dinner and go take a nap on the couch. And meanwhile, I'm changing diapers and making dinner and cleaning house and trying to get through a pile of laundry and working and doing everything. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what do I need him for? Mm. You know, he's just a paycheck to me. You know, why do I even need him? If he's not here, one less person to clean up after. I can make macaroni and cheese for dinner. I don't have to make a big dinner, you know?
Yeah.
My life would be easier, right?
Sound like and, every other married woman. Like, I just, yeah, it's so funny, you know? Like, I remember if my father wasn't home, my mum wouldn't cook. She's like, what's the point? Your dad's not here. You guys just fend for yourselves tonight. And it's like, why are we that insignificant? Like, why is he the only person that deserves to be fed a hot meal? You know what I mean? So it's just such a common thing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I think it's you know, I would still feed my kids a hot meal if my husband wasn't there, but it might not be a three-course, it might not be, you know, everything exactly. that I would make, not yeah. so complicated a recipe sure. or whatever that I would make. It'd be an easier yeah. dinner
yeah.
because I knew they'd be happy with it, right?
Yeah.
So, but in that moment though, when I was really debating what to do, I decided that I really wanted a happy marriage. I wanted a happy marriage. Mm. My parents did not have a happy marriage. My parents fought all the time. Mm. My dad spent more nights on the couch than he did in their bedroom. And I just thought that that was normal and natural that if you fought, the husband would sleep on the couch. And so the first fight we had after we got married, I told him to sleep on the couch. And he's like, why would I sleep on the couch? I have a bed.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess it makes sense. But you know what you know, right? Yeah. You know what's been demonstrated to you. But I knew I didn't want their marriage. I knew I wanted a happy marriage. And so I decided I was going to do everything I could to make my husband happy.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, I was going to do whatever I could to make him happy. So I'd go to the grocery store and I'd bring back his favorite treat. Or make his favorite meals, maybe write him a little note before work. And I didn't put a time limit on it. I didn't say, I'm going to do this for 3 weeks. And if this guy doesn't shape up, he's out of here. You know, I didn't do that. I just decided this is what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, things changed. Things changed a lot.
For you?
The way my husband, yes, and our relationship, the way my husband reacted to me.
Yeah.
Was so much better, so much more loving and kind. But the biggest change was me personally.
Yeah.
I was the biggest change because my love for him grew as I was doing these things for him. And I loved doing things for him. And I changed, my attitude changed, my heart softened toward him and opened back up.
What did he do for you in return? Like, how did he show his appreciation?
Just by his presence more than anything, you know, instead of just coming home from work and putting up his feet and then falling asleep right after dinner, he wanted to talk and spend time together. And he'd join me in the kitchen to finish making dinner and join me in the kitchen to do the dishes. And everything kind of became a joint effort. And without me asking, without me demanding anything, without me expecting anything.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that I needed to change and was glad that I did. And then we did have this great, happy marriage. He was a wonderful guy. It would have been silly for me to lose him.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's love the one you're with, right?
Yeah. Well, how long did it take you to really figure that out? Did you get some coaching or did you just kind of change your thought process?
Yeah, no, I didn't get any coaching. I did just change my thought process. And it didn't take nearly as long as you would think that it would. People respond to people, right? You respond positively, negatively, however it is you respond to people, you respond to people. And it's awfully hard to respond negatively when somebody is really reaching out to you and doing great, being kind and then showing love. It's hard to be negative toward a person like that.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think in relationships, people kind of go, they go to give, but they very much have an expectation to receive. And you can break up with someone, look back and go, they were a really good person, but the reason why I left is because they didn't fight for me to be accepted by their family. So internally there was resentment there, because there's always a bigger issue, because that person can do things directly for you and your relationship. But in the bigger picture, for example, I'm just getting one example, right, that external to your relationship, there are other relationships that make your marriage a happy home. So, for example, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Your relationship is that child. If you don't have that support network around you, or you feel like, well, my family accept my partner, but their family don't accept me, but they're not going out of their way to fight against their family to say, hey, this is what's really important to me. If it's not a priority to you, I can no longer prioritize you, mum, dad, sorry, I've got my own family now. And then I find what happens is, whether it's the wife or the husband, grows resentment. And it doesn't matter sometimes how good your partner is to you. If your partner is going to lead a double life to try and just keep everyone happy, it's like, well, if we're meant to be here showing up for each other, you're not really showing up 100%. I don't care how nice you are. If you're not willing to really fight for me and have my back, how do you expect me to really give everything to you? Because they're kind of holding back.
Right. That's a tough, tough situation for sure. It's but then that's really not love. That's really not love if somebody's sort of living this double life.
Yeah.
Because first of all, your person, your partner should be your priority. You know, it's no longer your mom and dad, your brothers and sisters. They get knocked down a peg. Your partner should be your number one, the number one person in your life. And so if things are affecting your partner, they're affecting you. And sometimes a lot of it comes down to communication, because we can assume that people know, that our partner knows that it's obvious of what we need, but yet not voice it. And if you never voice it, if you never talk about it, I got news for you. Nobody is a mind reader. You know, I thought for a while my husband should read my mind. You know, he should just know when I'm thinking, that he should say nice things to me or do nice things for me. Like he should just know, instinctively know. Mm-hmm. But he was not a mind reader. We don't read each other's minds. So communication is so important.
How unhealthy do you think assumptions are in relationships?
Oh, so unhealthy. So unhealthy. You know, so often we misunderstand, and especially in today's day and age, when we're texting and the person's not in front of you, you're not hearing the inflections of their voice. You're not really feeling the mood of what's being said.
Yeah.
And then we make assumptions that, oh, geez, they're mad, or, oh, geez, they're whatever. When if you don't talk about it, you should never make an assumption. If you've got a question about it, you should have a relationship that is such that you feel comfortable going and talking to your partner about it. You know, if you just let it go, I had this moment in my marriage when I was early in my marriage, before kids, that I thought, oh, I'm going to really treat my husband right tonight. I'm going to, you know, do it up, and I'm going to make his favorite meal and clean our apartment. And he loved lasagna and he loved German chocolate cake. And I made one from scratch, and I thought for sure, put candles on the table, you know, just made it romantic and sweet.
Yeah.
I thought he's going to come home and be so happy, you know, right? Put on a little something sexy, you know, to greet him at the door.
Yeah.
And he came in and he just walked in like it was any other day. He didn't say a word. And I'm like, why is he not saying anything?
Yeah.
And then we sat down for dinner and he's eating the food, but he's not raving about it. He's not saying anything about the food. And Yeah. And so I'm stewing. I'm getting madder and madder as the minutes are passing.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was serving dessert, I practically threw it at him. And he said, "Are you mad at me?" And I said, "Am I mad at you?" "Yeah, I'm furious." "Well, why are you mad at me?" And I said, "Well, look at what I did. You know, look at all this that I did for you. This didn't just make itself. And you said nothing. You said nothing." And he said, "Well, wait a minute." He said, "First of all, I can't read your mind." He said, "And secondly, I've done nothing wrong. It's your expectations that got you in trouble." And I thought, who does he think he is, my dad? Like, he's trying to teach me some lesson? Made me even madder. I got up, went to the bedroom, slammed the door, and I'm thinking, he's blaming me? I did all this, and he's blaming my expectations? What is he saying, my expectations? And then I went, oh, you know, my expectations. It was my expectations. I never communicated to him what I needed. I never said, how do you like the place? You know, doesn't the place look nice? You know, how is food? But I never said that.
Do you normally wear something sexy and put candles on for dinner?
You know, it's so funny you would say that because my husband could be oblivious to some things. I think sometimes men are oblivious. And no, I don't always put candles on the table and wear something.
You think he would have said, "Honey, you look hot tonight. Oh, love the lisette," like a little bit of a pre. I mean, I don't think you had high expectations that night. Sorry. I think you're being too hard on yourself just quietly.
Right. Well, you know, it kind of goes both ways though, because, He told me over the years a couple different things. One that I don't believe at all. And he said that because he was left-handed, he wasn't real romantic and didn't pass out a whole lot of compliments. And I don't think that's true. I think that was an excuse. But another thing that he told me is, you know, when you get all dolled up, you know, and you're feeling great about yourself, you got this new outfit on and you're going out to a wedding, you're going out to on the town, you're going out to do something. You just want him to say, or you want her to say, "Oh my gosh, you look fabulous," right? I mean, you just want to hear those words.
100%.
But my husband told me that to him, I always looked great. And so for him to say, "Oh my gosh, you look so great," that almost took away for him how he felt about me all the time. And so it's not just in that moment that I look great. And I thought, wow, it kind of makes sense, I guess. But I realized it's okay for me to ask. If I need to hear, like, I love romance. I love romance.
Yes.
My husband was not romantic.
Yeah. So he verbally just wasn't, words of affirmation were just not his way of expressing love.
Right. I mean, we were physically inseparable, you know, watching TV, we'd be right close together. We always sat together, always holding hands when we were out, always whatever, you know, we were very bonded physically, and physical touch was probably his thing, right? His love language. And I needed words of affirmation. I needed that. But because it wasn't what he needed, he didn't quite understand it as much. But I needed romance. I needed that. I love romance. And for several years of our marriage, I expected him to create the romance. And thought that he should. Know that
without telling him that's what you needed, telling him what your needs were.
Right. But it's assuming that he knows, right? And it's expectations, and those things get you in trouble. And so I finally figured out that I'm the one that needs romance. He's happy just sitting on the couch watching TV. You know, I want the candlelights and the new negligee. You know, I want the romance, the weekend away.
Yeah.
And so I started creating the romance.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I loved doing things for him. Like, I loved creating a special weekend away, you know, and surprising him with something and doing those romantic things.
And he would have loved that too. It's just that it wasn't his, he wasn't the person to initiate it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, we're going to have to wrap this up, but I think you're going to be the person to help people kill assumptions in their relationships moving forward, right? Because it sounds like you've really lived it and you understand that, you know, love languages are such a pillar to understanding each other, but you also have to explain the obvious to your partner, because if you don't actually say, sometimes we sit back and go, I'm just going to sit back and wait for them to wow me with physical touch and tell me how beautiful I am. And it's like, they're not wired that way. That's not what they're capable of doing. But if you tell them you like to receive it that way, then they might be more aware of it. But that's where I think a lot of relationships, particularly in the early days, run into roadblocks, is because we're sitting back waiting for things to just magically happen, knowing our two upbringings are completely different, right? So I hope that when people come and work with you, Kim, you know, you're that one person that can really help them move past some of those expectations, removing expectations, killing assumptions, and actually asking for what you want in your relationship. So with that, how do people get in touch with you if they want to come and work with you?
Well, I am literally the only Kim Sorrell spelled my way in the entire world because my last name is obnoxious. It has way too many letters. There are two R's, two E's, two L's, S-O-R-R-E-L-L-E, Kim Sorrell. Yep. My book, Love Is a pretty easy title to remember. And so Googling Love Is, chances are I'm going to pop up. And but contact me through my website or on social media, wherever. I love hearing from people. I love helping people. I love seeing relationships go from mediocre to fantastic. I love hearing the stories and seeing what can happen with people.
Amazing. Very quickly, and then we'll go. Tell us your best client transformation.
Oh, gosh. There was a couple that was on the brink of divorce. She had already filed papers, just hadn't given them to him yet. And she just had it. She just was at the end and felt like she was getting nothing out of the relationship, just was just miserable, just miserable. And we had 4 one-hour sessions. That's it. Mm-hmm. 4 one-hour sessions, 2 weeks apart. So in 8 weeks, she went from having divorce papers to ripping them up and planning a second honeymoon.
Wow. How powerful is that? That's amazing. All right. Well, guys, all of Kim's details are in the show notes below. So reach out to Kim and have a chat with Kim about how you can either revive your relationship or retune your thought process around managing expectations in love. So, Kim, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story. You're an absolute trooper. You know, have you remarried? Have you met
someone? I have not. You know, the dating game and I have not been good friends necessarily.
Yeah. Tough. It's I think times are very different these days. Very, very different. So, but the most important thing is that you've managed to get out there, still kick ass with business, probably still have a very healthy social life and stuff like that. So, you know, at least you're still living a life and you're not, you know, become a depressed kind of widow. So it's good. And you're helping people. So it's amazing. So Kim, thank you so much. Everyone else, I wanted to say massive thank you for jumping on the show today. People that are live on Instagram, thank you for jumping on and having a listen halfway through the recording. You know what to do, guys. Give us a follow if you want to be the first to be notified when a new episode is up every Monday morning. And leave a review either on Spotify. You can just either pick 5 stars, and on iTunes, you can actually leave a written review. Honest reviews are always welcome. And yeah, Kim, thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me. You're fantastic. Your show is fantastic. It should be the top of everybody's podcast list.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That means a lot. I put so much work into it. So that kind of makes me want to cry. But
thank you. Yeah, well, you're wonderful. It's a joy to know you.
Oh, we'll talk to you soon.